body at the base of Indigo Ridge.
I gasped. What? Why didn't you call me?
Slipped my mind.
Asshole. Officer Smith, you and I will be having a conversation when I return to the station. With that, I ended the call, tossing my phone aside so I could concentrate on catching Alan. His brake lights glowed as he slowed for a turnoff. There was no road sign or marker, but I followed his trail of dust down the gravel road, the mountains growing closer with every minute. One cliff stood out from the rest, its vertical face daunting as it towered above the trees and meadows below. Three trucks were clustered together in the grass ahead, parked on the other side of the fence. Alan slowed when he approached, easing the cruiser toward the ditch. I parked behind him, snagging my phone and shoving it in a pocket. Then I rifled through my purse for a small notepad and pen before climbing out.
Chief,
Alan stood on the side of the road, waiting for me to join him. What's going on? Officer Smith's short explanation had been lacking at best.
One of the ranch hands for the Edens stumbled across a body this morning.
This is the Eden Ranch? It was a stupid question. When I followed Alan's gaze to the men standing beside the trucks, I spotted Griffin instantly. His legs were planted wide as he stood beside that familiar black truck. His hands were fisted at his hips. The words, "Go away," might as well have been etched on the brim of his faded black hat. I steeled my spine. Lead the way, Alan.
Yes, ma'am.
He set off through the tall grass, walking to the four-row barbed wire fence past the ditch. With one hand pulling up the second wire and a booted foot pressing down the third, he opened a gap for me to duck and slide through. I took his place, holding the wires for him. Then it was my turn to lead, walking toward Griffin.
Winslow?
His voice was flat, unreadable. Griffin? My voice sounded much the same. I had a job to do. Can you show us the body? He nodded for us to follow him past the line of trucks. A younger man was sitting against the tire of the last pickup in the row. Beside him crouched another man, older, with a handlebar mustache and a tan cowboy hat. The kid on the ground looked pale. Tear tracks stained his cheeks. He must have been the one to find the body. I'd seen enough faces like his to know who was the first on the scene.
Connor found the girl,
Griffin said, keeping his voice low as we walked toward the corner of the fence. Beyond it, rocks clustered at the base of the cliff. I'll have to question him later.
Sure.
He nodded.
He works for us. I sent him out here to fix fence.
What time was that?
Around 10. We worked in the barn first thing this morning for a couple of hours.
Did he touch the body?
Probably.
He sighed, then led the way over the fence. The posts were wooden here, the wires too tight to stretch, so I planted a boot on the bottom brace and swung my legs over. Then I set off toward the cliff, walking slowly to take it all in. A trail of broken grass had been made, probably from Connor and Griffin. Otherwise, the area seemed untouched. Griffin and Alan stayed close behind as I set the pace to the rocks, moving as methodically up their steep face as I had through the flat meadow. We climbed until I reached the landing spot. And a broken body. I flipped off the switch in my mind that panicked at the blood. I shut down the emotions that came with a gruesome death. I swallowed hard. I did my job and surveyed the scene. The body was of a young woman, face down. A few errant strands of blonde hair blew in the breeze. Death blackened the area beneath her smashed skin and bones. Most of the blood had dried and hardened in sticky pools and trickles from where it had flowed. She wore a white dress, the skirt mostly unharmed where it brushed her ankles. The bodice would never be clean again. Her arms were splayed to the sides. One leg was bent at an unnatural angle. Only a few patches of smooth, graying skin remained on her calves. Otherwise, bone protruded from the surface of her limbs.
Another one.
Alan whispered. I looked over my shoulder. Another what? He pointed to the ridge above us. There was a trail cut into the rock about halfway between us and the cliff's pinnacle. I hadn't noticed it on the drive. The path disappeared around a bend, probably where it descended down the hillside, but the end was directly above us. Had this girl been pushed? Had she jumped? What am I looking at, Alan?
Suicide.
He explained. Damn. Why do you say that? Alan and Griffin shared a look. What? What am I missing?
You're new here.
Griffin spoke the word new with such scorn, it was like he'd taken those three letters and thrown them in my face.
This isn't the first body found at the base of Indigo Ridge.
How many others have there been before?
Two.
Two? This made three. Holy shit. What the hell was going on? What had I just walked into?
We've had a string of suicides in the past 10 years.
I blinked. A string of suicides?
Seven total.
Seven? My jaw nearly dropped. That's almost one a year. Alan's shoulders slumped.
It's been like this domino effect. One kid does it, another decides to do it too.
I pointed to the ridge. And this is where they come?
Not always,
Griffin said. I took in the girl's bare feet, the smocked sundress. Had she been in shorts or jeans, I might have thought this had been a hiking accident. Do we know who this is? I asked.
Lily Green,
Griffin answered.
Connor thought so, at least. They are about the same age. I think they were friends.
There was nothing left of the girl's face. So how had Connor recognized her? Maybe from the blue butterfly tattoo on her wrist. Alan, are you good to take photos of the scene?
Yes, I was here for the last one.
The last one? My stomach rolled. All right, I'll call the station and get the medical examiner out here so we can get the body moved. The sooner we can identify her, the sooner we can notify next of kin.
You got it, Chief.
I'll need to talk to your employee now, I told Griffin. He answered by retreating down the rocks. My head was spinning as I followed. Seven suicides in 10 years. That was crazy. That was too many. Suicide rates were higher in rural areas than cities, but seven suicides in 10 years? That was too many. I knew what happened with young kids. And Alan was right. Sometimes it could become this domino effect. We'd had the same thing happen at the high school in Bozeman for a few years. Three kids had attempted suicide. Two had died. The principal and teachers had jumped all over it after the second death, making sure they were watching the kids more closely and providing outlets for other students to report friends who might be at risk. Seven suicides in this tiny community. How had I not known about this? Why hadn't Pops told me? Why hadn't this been brought up during my interviews? I'd asked plenty of questions about past criminal cases, though maybe they hadn't considered these crimes. Had these at least been documented? The questions rolled through my mind as I followed Griffin to the fence and climbed over. Then I put them all away when we joined the other two men at the trucks.
Connor, this is Winslow Covington.
Griffin crouched beside the young man.
She's the new chief of police, and she's going to ask you some questions.
The kid looked up from his spot on the ground, his face etched in sheer heartache and terror. I bent so he wouldn't have to stand. Hi, Connor.
Ma'am?
He sniffled and dragged a forearm across his nose. Mind if I ask you some questions? He shook his head. The man with the mustache clapped Connor on the shoulder, then stood and walked to the truck's tailgate, giving us some space. Griffin stood, but his feet didn't move. He towered over us as I asked my questions and took my notes. It was fairly straightforward. Connor had come out to fix the fence per Griffin's orders. He'd caught sight of Lily's dress on the rocks and rushed to the body. He hadn't tried to move her, but he'd picked up her hand to check for a pulse. The tattoo, as I'd suspected, had given her identity away. From there, he'd climbed down and called Griffin. Thank you, Connor. I gave him a sad smile. I'll probably have a few follow-up questions for you.
Okay.
A tear streaked down his cheek.
We went to high school together, Lily and me. We dated our junior year. Broke up, but she was always...
The tears came faster. Finding a dead body was never easy. Finding someone you loved? This would haunt him. I'm so sorry.
Me too.
His chin quivered.
Wish she had talked to me. Wish I had talked to her. This isn't your fault.
Griffin's tall body dropped beside mine.
You head on out with Jim, okay? What about the fencing truck? I'll take care of it.
Connor shoved to his feet, his balance unsteady. Griffin stood and clamped a hand around Connor's arm, escorting him to where Jim was waiting. I followed at a distance, watching as Griffin hugged the kid and helped him into the passenger seat of a white truck. The door was marked with an E and underscored with a U-shaped bar beneath, the Eden Ranch emblem. Griffin spoke to Jim for a moment before the older man nodded, then went to the driver's side. "Will he stay with Connor?" I asked Griffin as Jim and Connor pulled away, rolling down a two-tire track.
"He will.
I need to keep this quiet for a little bit so I can ensure we have the right identity, then notify next of kin."
"Lily's mom is a nurse at the nursing home. Ellen can get you her information."
"What if it's not Lily?"
"It's her, Winslow. We know our own people."
As in, I wasn't one of them. Ouch. A new trail of dust followed a vehicle down the main gravel road. Hopefully, it was the medical examiner. "This is your property, correct?" I asked.
"Yes."
"Is this road ever closed, with a gate at night or something?"
"No."
He shook his head.
"The property on the other side of the road used to belong to another ranch, but I bought it 2 years ago. This is all Eden property now. There's no reason to gate it off other than to segment pastures for cattle."
"Do you ever have people drive out here?"
"Not really. It's private property."
He fisted his hands on his hips.
"Why?"
"Have you seen any strange vehicles coming and going this week?"
"This is a huge ranch. It's impossible to keep track of traffic."
His jaw clenched.
"Why are you asking?"
I looked up and down the gravel road. There wasn't a vehicle in sight that might have belonged to the girl. She'd been barefoot. Where were her shoes? I'm simply asking questions. That's why I was here.
"That girl jumped to her death. Her mother is probably worried sick about her. How about you stop asking questions and start providing answers?"
"How about I leave the ranching to you and you leave investigations to me? I'm just doing my job." He scoffed.
"You want to do your job? Go tell Lily's mother. Anything else is a waste of fucking time."
Without another word, he stormed away, marching to his truck. He left me standing in a field, watching his taillights disappear. "That went well," I muttered. "Shit." I tipped my head to the sky. Maybe this wasn't how the previous chief would have handled it. Maybe he would have taken one look at that poor girl and known it was suicide. But I'm the chief now, and we'd do things my way, whether Griffin Eden liked it or not.
Chapter 4. Griffin. The ice-cold beer bottle had barely skimmed my lips when the doorbell rang. "Christ," I grumbled. "Now what?" It had been a hell of a long day, and I wasn't in the mood for visitors, but it was probably an employee. The members of my family didn't know how to ring doorbells, so ignoring my guest wasn't an option. With my beer bottle in hand, I padded down the hallway to the door in my bare feet. If I was lucky, a rare occurrence, I wouldn't have to put my boots back on for whatever this visit entailed. There were times when it would be nice to put some space between home and work, to live off the ranch where I wasn't as easily accessible to the staff or my family. But there wasn't a place on earth I'd rather be than on this ranch, even when people showed up at my doorstep unannounced. I pulled the door open, expecting, well, anyone else besides Winslow. Her eyes, the color of ripe blueberries, seemed bluer in the fading evening light. One look at her beautiful face, and for a moment, I forgot to breathe.
"Hi,"
she said. I tipped the bottle to my lips, then I chugged. Drinking seemed necessary around this woman. Probably not a brilliant decision considering alcohol was the reason I'd gotten into this mess with her in the first place, but one look at those eyes and that silky hair, and my cock twitched beneath my jeans. Why the fuck couldn't I control myself around her? Her pretty gaze narrowed as I gulped half my beer.
"Thirsty?"
I forced the bottle away from my lips. Something like that. There was no need to ask her how she knew where I lived. Not only could she look it up in her database at the station, but anyone in Quincy could give her directions. Hell, 3 minutes on Main and she'd likely bump into a relative. Finding an Eden in this town was about as easy as looking for leaves on a tree in June. "What are you doing here?" I asked.
"You never answered my questions on Wednesday."
Wednesday. a day I would like to forget. I'd been in a shit mood for the past 2 days. I'd barked at everyone the way I'd barked at her at the scene. In my defense, that had been the second time I'd found a dead woman on my property. So you came to my house?
Would you have come down to the station if I'd asked?
No.
That's what I figured.
She raised her chin, her feet planted firm. Wynne wasn't going to leave until I talked to her, and this time, I couldn't exactly walk away. I sighed and stood aside, jerking my chin for her to come inside. She stepped past me, and her sweet citrus scent wrapped around me like a vine. My body reacted instantly, tightening in all the wrong places. I took another pull from my beer. The only rational explanation for this infuriating desire had to be lust. I'd gone too long without sex, and now I was acting like a randy teenager. Lust. Definitely lust. And those freckles on her nose. God damn it, they did it for me. I was too busy to be studying her freckles. Did you know who I was? I blurted.
Pardon?
At Willie's, did you know who I was?
No. You said you came through town. I assumed you didn't live here.
You said Bozeman. I thought you were a tourist.
You really didn't know who I was?
I wouldn't have fucked you in my truck had I known. As a general rule, I don't do hookups with locals. Gets messy when women realize I'm not interested in a relationship. I'm too busy.
Ah, then you're in luck, because I have no desire for a relationship. And as far as I'm concerned, it never happened.
Like fuck it had never happened. That night was burned into my brain. But if she wanted to pretend it hadn't happened, that was fine by me. No one in Quincy needed to know I'd given the chief of police 3 orgasms.
Back to the reason for my visit. I'd like to know more about that road to Indigo Ridge.
She was all business tonight, her shoulders square and her expression stoic, just like it had been Wednesday. Not a ghost of her mesmerizing smile graced her soft lips. Probably safest that way. Want a beer?
No, thanks.
On duty?
That's why I'm here.
I finished my bottle, making her stand there and watch. Then I retreated to the kitchen for beer number 2. Maybe 2 Bud Lights would dull my senses enough so I wouldn't have a raging erection while she was in my house. At the moment, my dick was ready to say, fuck it, and carry her to my bedroom. We hadn't had a lot of room to maneuver in the back seat of my truck. On a king-sized mattress, Wynne and I could have some fun. Jesus. I scrubbed a hand over my face as I opened the refrigerator. What was wrong with me? Wynne was here to talk about a dead girl, and I was thinking of sex. The mental image of Lily Green's smashed body was sobering, and I closed the fridge, foregoing the beer. Did you talk to Lily's mother?
I did.
A wave of sadness broke her neutral composure.
It didn't take long to confirm Lily's identity through fingerprints. I spoke to her mother on Wednesday evening.
Have you ever done that before? Notified a parent that their child was dead. She gave me a single nod.
It's the worst part of this job.
Sorry.
My mentor at the Bozeman PD used to tell me that it was our duty and our responsibility to ease the burden any way we could. That we never know how we'll change the lives we touch with this job. He once had to tell a woman that her husband had been killed in a liquor store robbery. Years later, he bumped into her. They started dating, and they're married now. He'd always remind me that even the dark days pass, that we heal from our losses. I don't know if that's true when you lose a child, but I hope for Lily's mother's sake that in time she finds comfort. And I hope that I was able to soften the blow, as much as that was possible.
I studied her as she spoke, gentle honesty and vulnerability in her words. If she'd spoken to Lily's mother like this, with such truth and compassion, then yes, she'd softened that blow. As much as that was possible. The news of Lily's suicide had traveled quickly through Quincy, as expected. I'd gone into town this morning to place a classified at the paper, and the Nelsons had been buzzing with the news. No doubt it would be next week's headline. Emily had fished for more information, and when I'd stayed quiet, had made a not-so-subtle offer to trade sex for secrets. I'd decided to post my help-wanted ad online instead of in the paper, Emily had been a one-night mistake last year. A mistake I was still paying for. I hoped Winslow wouldn't turn out to be the same. Was there a note? I asked. From Lily. She ignored my questions and asked one of her own.
Can you tell me more about the road to Indigo Ridge?
It's a gravel road. There's not much else to tell.
There's a trail going up the ridge. I walked it yesterday. How often do you or staff members of your ranch use it?
Why does it matter?
Because this is an ongoing investigation.
Into a suicide.
Into a young woman's death.
She spoke like Lily could have been murdered. Don't drag this out looking for something that's not there. You'll only make it worse. Her fists clenched.
I'm asking questions because I owe it to that girl and to her mother to do my job.
Your answers would have come with a suicide note. Wynne didn't even blink. So there was no note. She crossed her arms over her chest.
I stopped by your parents' place before coming here. Your dad said you've taken over management of the ranch. I'd prefer to talk with you because he said you were the one who'd know most of the day-to-day routines. But if I should head back there and ask them these questions?
No. Damn it. This was not a topic I'd put on Dad. The first suicide off Indigo Ridge had been years ago. He'd found the body and taken it really hard. To this day, he avoided that road at all costs. I wouldn't make him relive that, even if it meant reliving it myself. Let's talk in the living room. My house wasn't nearly as big as my parents' 6,000-square-foot home, but half that size suited me just fine. The open concept and vaulted ceilings gave my rancher character and an open feel. With 3 bedrooms and an office, it was plenty for me. I didn't have 6 kids to wrangle, unlike Mom and Dad, who'd needed to add on twice to fit us all. I walked to the couch and took a seat as Winslow went to the opposite side of the coffee table, sinking into a leather chair. She glanced at the framed photo on the end table.
Your siblings?
All 6 of us. I'm the oldest, then Knox, Lila, and Talia, the twins. Then there's Eloise, who manages the inn.
Pops introduced me to her after lunch on Monday.
That awful, tense lunch. Mateo is the youngest. He's working here on the ranch and at the inn until he decides what he wants to do. He'd probably take over a family business or start one of his own. That's what the rest of us had done. My parents had instilled their entrepreneurial spirit in us all, and their love for Quincy. Each of us had moved away for college. Knox and Talia had stayed away the longest, but eventually the pull of Quincy and family had brought them home too. Winslow studied the photo, memorizing our faces. Plenty of people had a hard time telling me and my siblings apart, especially when we'd been young. Our ages were close. Knox and I had the same build, though his tattoos set him apart. The girls were undeniably sisters. But I suspected Winslow wouldn't have any trouble recognizing my siblings. She was smart, focused, good qualities, and a cop. Okay, Chief. I leaned my elbows onto my knees. What do you want to know? She shifted, retrieving a small notepad and pen from the back pocket of her jeans. It was the same one she'd had on Wednesday. She flipped it open, and the ballpoint pen hovered above the paper.
The trail up Indigo Ridge. What's it used for?
Nothing these days. Before we bought the neighboring place, we used that trail to move cattle up the mountain. Even then, it was rare. We'd only take it if we were having a drought and were short on grass. There's a cutoff that winds to the back side of the ridge where we've got about 200 acres. Her pen flew over the paper.
I think I saw that cutoff when I was up there.
It's pretty overgrown now. After I bought the neighboring place, it gave us a direct road to the mountain. We haven't moved cattle on that trail since. Part of the reason that I'd pushed so hard to buy the neighboring property was because I hated moving cattle up that trail. It was steep and required we go single file, following the cattle by horse.
I believe I saw that road too, though road is probably a generous term. It was more like 2 tracks through the trees.
That's the one.
Does anyone go up there? Or is it strictly for cattle?
My uncle. He lives there now. After I bought the neighbor's place, he built a cabin in the mountains. It's right on the border with the Forest Service. He's been there for about a year. Her pen scratched on the paper as she made a note.
And would he have recalled seeing anyone coming up or down the trail?
No, his place isn't anywhere near that trail. And Briggs was struggling when it came to recollection these days.
Do people come out there to go hiking?
Not without permission. And even then, I wouldn't give it. Not to Indigo Ridge.
So no one ever goes out there?
Kids, sometimes, I admitted. Curious kids who know that's where two girls committed suicide. I caught a group of them last fall. Haven't seen anyone up there since.
Was Lily with that group of kids?
No, they were younger, in high school. Her pen scratched another note.
The medical examiner determined that the time of death was likely late Sunday night into early Monday morning. Would any of your employees have been in the area at that time? Or perhaps your uncle?
You want alibis.
Call it alibis, if you'd like. I'm trying to determine if anyone would have seen her go up there and if she was really alone. We found her car parked off the highway. From where it was parked to the place where she would have jumped, it's 7 miles. I walked it yesterday, and it took me almost 3 hours. I'm wondering if someone might have seen her during that time.
No one who works for me.
If it was at night, she would have had to have a flashlight. We didn't find one on the trail or by her body. We also didn't find shoes.
What are you getting at?
Where are her shoes? If she walked it without them, her feet would have looked like ground meat. Her feet had some scratches, but not 7 miles worth. How did she get up there in the dark? By 11, it's pitch black.
You said the medical examiner suspected it could have been Monday morning.
At the very latest, but again, that's time of death.
Maybe she went up during the day, stayed there for a while, I don't know. Wynn flipped to a new sheet on the notepad.
Would anyone have been around early Monday morning to see someone leave the ridge?
You think someone went up there with her?
Possibly.
And what, killed her? I shook my head and sighed. It's a suicide, Chief, just like the other girls who jumped off that ridge. I don't know why they did it. My heart aches for their families, but it's exactly the same as the other two times. I know because I was there for all three. She blinked. Didn't know that, did you? I muttered. Dad found the first body, I found the second.
And now Lily Green?
I nodded. It's awful. Truly awful. What we need are more resources in town for these girls, not to go looking for a killer when there isn't one. Which you'd understand if you were from here, but you're not. She opened her mouth, then closed it before speaking. Her nostrils flared. What?
Nothing.
She sat a little straighter.
Is there anything else you can tell me about the other girls?
It'll all be in a report, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure, but I'm asking anyway.
The girl I found was 2 years ago. She was one of Eloise's friends. It shook us all up. Eloise knew she was having a hard time, but didn't think it would go this far. So now my sister carried that guilt. We all did. The girl Dad found was 5 years ago. She'd been friends with Lila.
I'm sorry. That had to be hard on your family.
It was. Winslow closed her notebook, then stood.
Thank you for your time.
That's it?
For now. I'll show myself out.
Without another word, she strode out of the living room. The smart thing to do would be to let her go. Keep some distance. Let her walk out the door while I stayed right here on this couch. But I stood, the manners my mother had ingrained in us from an early age nagging. We escorted guests out and thanked them for stopping by. I caught up to Wynn just as she was about to reach for the handle. I stretched past her, crowding way too close, and opened the door. Another manner. Men held doors for women. She glanced up at me, her breath catching. Once again, that sweet scent of hers filled my nose. Her mouth parted, but otherwise she didn't move. An inch, maybe two, separated our bodies. That tiny gap crackled, the electricity between us just as strong as it had been at Willie's. She was more beautiful than I'd realized sitting in that dark, musty bar. Wynn's blue eyes broke from mine, and the moment her gaze dropped to my mouth, I was done for. I leaned closer.
What are you doing?
She whispered. I have no fucking clue. Then my lips were on hers. One sweep of my tongue against her lower lip, and we weren't standing by my door. We were at Willie's, locked in my truck. Our clothes were stripped and strewn on the floor. Our mouths were fused as she straddled my lap. Days later, and I could still feel the way she'd moved over me, rocking her hips up and down and up and down. The fingernail marks she'd left on my shoulders had faded, and damn it, I wanted them back. I let go of the door to wrap Wynne in my arms, pulling her flush against my chest. She came willingly, her tongue tangling with mine as I savored her sweetness. Her lips were soft, yet frantic. Her hands gripped my t-shirt, balling it in her fists as I slanted my mouth over hers for a deeper dive. My pulse throbbed in my veins. My arousal was like steel, as hard as the gun holstered on her hip. I was a second away from kicking the door closed and carrying her to my bedroom when the sound of a horse's whinny broke us apart. Winslow tore her lips from mine, our breaths mingling. Her eyes widened as she stepped out of my arms. My chest heaved as I worked to regain my breath, and before the haze of desire had cleared, she was gone. She walked away without a backward glance. I stood in the threshold, arms crossed over my chest, and watched her climb into her SUV and tear down the gravel road, disappearing into the grove of trees that surrounded my property. Shit. I rubbed her kiss from my lips, then went inside for that second beer. Anything to get her intoxicating taste off my tongue. The second bottle didn't work. Neither did the third.
Chapter 5. Winslow. Why had I kissed him? Over the past 3 days, that question had bounded through my mind like a sugared-up kid on a trampoline. I'd lived in Quincy for 8 days, and I'd kissed Griffin at 2 of our 4 encounters. Questioning my decision to move, questioning my sanity, had become a regular part of my daily routine, and nightly, since sleeping had been difficult. This morning, while brushing my teeth, I'd considered for a split second going home to Bozeman. Except there was no home, and quitting wasn't in my nature. Time. What I needed was time. I'd survive the second week like I'd survive the first. If I could make it through the next 8 days without kissing Griffin Eden, maybe I'd be able to get that man out of my head. Work demanded my full attention. My focus was on building any kind of positive rapport with the officers. So far, things at the station were strained. Eventually, the staff would warm up to me, right? Good morning. I walked into the break room and conversation stopped. The 3 officers standing around the coffee pot scattered, each nodding as they passed me on their way to the bullpen. I swallowed a groan and refilled my mug before retreating to my office, closing the door behind me. Then I sagged against its face. I'm not quitting. The attitude in the station had grown colder. Even Janice had given me a few sideways looks when I'd started asking questions about Lily Green, Indigo Ridge, and the abundance of suicides in the last decade. Apparently, it was a no-touch topic. Everyone looked at me like this was a no-touch subject. Maybe Griffin was right. Maybe I needed to let it go and accept it at face value. I didn't want to drudge up painful memories and make it worse for families and friends. But it just felt off. The best cop I knew had once told me to always follow my instincts. Files were scattered over the surface of my desk again, despite the hour I'd spent organizing last night. I still hadn't made it through the past 3 months' worth of cases, but I'd asked Janice to pull another 3 anyway, expanding my window to 6 months. Janice had delivered this morning. On top of them were the files of each suicide in Quincy. 7 deaths. I'd read through each report 3 times already, hoping that it would squash this uneasy feeling. It hadn't. What was I missing? Something, right? I shoved off the door and walked to my chair, setting my coffee aside. Then I picked up the phone and dialed the number I'd been meaning to call for a week.
Cole Goodman,
he answered. I smiled at his warm voice. Hey.
Who is this?
Funny, I deadpanned. You better not have forgotten about me already. He chuckled.
Never. Is this your new work number?
Yep, I think my personal phone was swallowed up by the unpacked boxes at home. I haven't seen it for days.
Sounds about right,
he teased. Cole had spent many hours listening to me complain that I'd lost my personal phone. In my defense, I had yet to misplace my station cell or a radio. Organization wasn't necessarily a weakness. I could be organized, but I didn't mind a little chaos either. When my focus was on one lane, everything else became a little blurry. Unpacking and finding my phone just didn't seem as important as wrapping my head around Lily Green's death.
I was just thinking about you,
he said.
How'd the first week go?
It was, interesting.
Uh-oh, what's going on?
I sighed and the truth came rushing out. No one likes me here. I keep getting looks like I'm too young for this job and only got it because of Pops.
You knew this wouldn't be easy.
I know, I muttered. I just hoped.
Hang in there. It's only been a week. You're a great cop. Give them time to see that.
All things I'd told myself, but somehow hearing them from Cole gave me a boost of confidence. Cole had been my mentor in Bozeman. When I'd been promoted to detective, he'd been there to help me every step along the way. Whenever I had a difficult case, Cole was my go-to person to talk it through. In our years working together, he'd become more than a colleague. He was also a cherished friend. His wife, Poppy, owned my favorite restaurant in Bozeman. Their kids were the sweetest souls on earth. When I'd lost my own family, his had been there to see me through the darkest days. I miss you guys. I'm homesick for the Goodmans.
We miss you too. Poppy was talking about taking a weekend trip to visit.
I'd love it. For them, I'd actually unpack my house.
Tell me about the station.
Actually, if you have a few minutes, can I run something by you?
Always.
I spent the next 15 minutes telling him about Lily Green and the other suicides. I told him how Lily's mother had collapsed into my arms when I'd gone to her home and told her the horrific news. Her scream had been so full of agony that I'd never forget that noise. Heartbreak was an ugly, black sound. I'd stayed with Melina Green for hours that night. I'd held her hand as she'd called her ex-husband and told him about Lily. Then I'd waited with her as he'd driven the 2 hours from Missoula. When he'd arrived, his eyes red-rimmed and his soul broken over his daughter's death, I'd given him my condolences, then left them to grieve. Yesterday, I'd stopped by Melina's house to check on her. She'd answered the door wearing a bathrobe and tear-stained cheeks. And once again, she'd fallen into my arms and I'd held her as she'd cried. But Melina was a strong woman. She'd collected herself and begun to talk about Lily. For an hour, she'd told me about the bright, beautiful light her daughter had been. Lily had been 21 and living with her mom to save money. When I'd asked Melina if she'd found a suicide note in Lily's room, she'd confessed that she hadn't had the emotional strength to check. But her ex had gone into Lily's bedroom while he'd been in Quincy and hadn't found anything. I'm trying to be sensitive and not push too hard with the mother, I told Cole. But my impression was that she and Lily were very close. She's shocked, truly shocked that Lily would kill herself.
I can't imagine her pain,
Cole said.
She might not want to think about the signs that she missed, or that her daughter was hiding anything from her. You need to talk to other people who knew Lily.
That's my plan. I started with the officers and staff here.
And what did they say?
No one knew her well. One of the officers said that her son graduated with Lily, but they'd lost touch when her son moved away for college. Most of the others just knew her from the bank where she worked as a teller. Everyone says that Lily was always smiling, that she was a happy young woman. That didn't necessarily mean anything. I knew how it felt to feel entirely lost and alone, but force a smile for the outside world.
What about the other suicides?
The reports are thin. The former chief hadn't been a stickler for details. That was something the staff here was going to have to change because I wasn't going to let short, hurried reports be the standard. Last year, a 17-year-old boy hung himself in his basement. Before that, it's all been women. Three, including Lily, jumped to their deaths off a cliff. Another slit her wrists in the bathtub. Another downed a bottle of prescription pills. And the first, 10 years ago, shot herself with her father's pistol. I guess he was a cop. No one in the station had wanted to talk about that case.
Damn.
Cole blew out a long breath.
That's a lot for such a small town, especially because it's mostly women.
Exactly. Suicide rates were over 3 times higher in men. Yet in Quincy, it was like the statistics had flip-flopped.
It's not unheard of, but it gives me pause.
Me too. It's not necessarily out of the normal range, but the girls were all in their 20s. Typically, I would have expected them to be younger, dealing with high school stuff, you know? These girls were all working and transitioning to their adult lives. The high school problems should have largely been behind them.
Were they all from Quincy?
Yes.
Even though they were older, they were probably still connected to it. Their old acquaintances, good and bad, the town.
True.
What does your gut say?
He asked. It's unsettled, I admitted. Maybe if we had found a note or a journal or anything that showed this girl was struggling, I wouldn't feel so uneasy.
Keep looking. Keep talking to people.
I'm ruffling feathers. He laughed.
You're quite good at losing your phone and keys, but you're fantastic at ruffling feathers.
Ha ha, I muttered, a smile on my lips. I'd missed Cole's teasing.
Rile him up, Winnie. If that's what it takes until your gut stops screaming, ruffle all the feathers you need.
Thanks. A knot of anxiety loosened in my stomach. Cole often told me what I already knew. That didn't make his words any less powerful.
Call me if you need to talk it through again.
Okay. Give Poppy a hug for me. Brady and McKenna, too.
Will do. I'll shoot you a text with some weekends that work for us.
Can't wait. We said our goodbyes, and then I sat back in my chair, staring at the mess of files to review. Maybe I was reading too much into Lily Green. Quincy was a small town, and I had to think that my officers had a good pulse for what was happening. If there was any reason to suspect foul play, they would have seen it, right? And Pops, too. He hadn't mentioned a thing about the suicides. Except, what if the reason no one had questioned these suicides was because they were from Quincy? I was the only person who hadn't spent years working in this department. Not only that, but every staff member had been born and raised in this county. Maybe to them, this was normal. The saddest truth would be if they were right. A knock came at the door. Come in, I called. Janice poked her head inside. Emily from the newspaper is on line one for you. Would you please tell her I'm in a meeting and take a message? Sure thing. She eased the door closed, leaving me to my own thoughts. I swiveled in my chair, right, then left. My eyes never wandered from the stack of files. Why? Why was Lily's death bothering me? No note. That was the biggest missing piece. Her car. Why had it been miles away from Indigo Ridge? Who'd taken her up there? Her shoes. If she'd walked, where were her shoes? On Saturday, after a fitful night's rest on Friday, thanks to the man who'd kissed me dizzy, I'd returned to Indigo Ridge. I'd canvassed the area, hiking the ridge not once more, but twice. Then I'd walked the path to where we'd found Lily's car again. No clues in sight, certainly no missing pair of shoes. What I really felt like doing with my day was heading out to the trail again, but the stack of files wasn't getting smaller, so I took a sip from my now cold coffee and got to work. 8 hours and too many files to count later, there wasn't anything particularly noteworthy, though I had added 3 more items to my list of new paperwork requirements. Janice had scheduled one-on-one meetings with every officer in the department, and starting tomorrow, I'd sit down with each to talk on an individual basis. I had positive praise for each person, except Officer Smith, but there were critiques, too. I doubted I'd win many friends by the time these meetings were complete, but whatever. This was my department now, damn it, and we were going to start creating reports worth reading. By the time Janice came in to say goodnight, I was exhausted and starving. I was in the middle of packing up a few files to take home for the night when my phone rang. Hey, Pops.
I'm grilling burgers for dinner.
I'm on my way. Need me to pick up anything?
Cold beer.
On it. I smiled and hustled out the door. After a quick stop by the convenience store for his favorite, Coors Original, I headed across town. Pops lived on the outskirts of Quincy, in a neighborhood nestled against the river. The house had been his and my grandmother's before she'd died 15 years ago. In all my life, the house hadn't changed. The outside was still the same pea green. The interior was a symphony of beige. My grandmother had loved chickens, and her collection of rooster and hen statues sat proudly above the kitchen cabinets. Walking through the front door was like walking into my childhood. His love for her clung to the outdated floral curtains, crocheted afghans, and cross-stitched toss pillows she'd left behind. "Pops?" I called from the entryway. He didn't answer, so I headed toward the back deck. The smoky scent of his barbecue greeted me as I stepped outside, along with another familiar face.
"Well, there she is."
Frank, my grandpa's neighbor and friend, popped out of a deck chair. He clapped once, then opened his arms.
"I've been waiting for you to come over here and visit."
I laughed and walked into his embrace. "Hey, Frank."
"Missed seeing your face, cutie. Welcome. Glad you're one of us now."
Was I one of them? Because I felt like an outsider, and the niggling in my stomach warned me that it might always be that way. Frank let me go, putting his hands on my shoulders to look me up and down.
"You're all grown up. Still can't believe you're our chief of police. I look at you and see that little girl in pigtails who'd come over and make mud pies in Rain's garden."
"How is Rain?"
"Come on over, see for yourself. She'd love to visit."
"I'll do that," I promised, feeling bad for not stopping by already. Rain and Frank had moved in next door when I was little. We'd come to visit Pops and Nana that weekend, and I remembered thinking how cool it was that their U-Haul had been from Mississippi. They were older than my parents and younger than my grandparents, but after Nana had died of a sudden heart attack when I was 15, Frank and Rain had adopted Pops. They'd been here for him through his wife's death, and when he'd lost his son and daughter-in-law. Frank and Rain had been here for Pops when I couldn't. They were part of the family. Frank was my grandfather's best friend. Now I was here and we could all be a family. "Are you staying for dinner?" I asked.
"Can't. I've been fixing up this old Jeep for Rain. The new fender just got here, so I need to do some tinkering."
He smacked his flat stomach.
"And she promised me paella for dinner."
Frank, like Pops, was a silver fox with a broad physique and muscled frame. The two of them went hiking together nearly every weekend in the summers, and during the week, they'd carpool to the local gym.
"I'd better get on,"
he said. "So good to see you, Frank."
"You too, Winnie."
He gave me a kind smile, then turned and shook hands with Pops.
"Feel like fishing tomorrow after work?"
"Absolutely."
"Good deal."
Frank waved, then walked down the deck stairs, crossing the lawn to disappear into his garage.
"How's my girl?"
Pops came over and wrapped me in a bear hug. "I'm okay," I sagged into his broad chest. His heartbeat was strong beneath my ear, a comforting rhythm that had been a steady beat my entire life. "How are you?"
"Hungry,"
I laughed and let him go. "What can I do?"
"Fetch me that cold beer."
While he grilled burgers, I readied the buns, toppings, and napkins. Then the two of us ate on the deck, the river beyond the yard providing the evening music. "Thanks for cooking dinner," I said when the dishes were done and we set off for an after-dinner stroll down his block.
"Of course. Glad I could track you down. I tried calling your other number. It said your voicemail box was full."
The messages were probably all from Skylar. Our breakup had been 4 months ago and the constant calls were wearing thin. "I can't find that phone. I don't even know when I lost it."
"I figured as much."
He laughed.
"How are you holding up?"
"I'm okay. Not great, not bad, just okay. It's been a week."
"I still can't believe sweet Lily Green. Breaks my heart."
"Mine too." Melina's distraught face popped into my mind. "You never said anything about the suicides." He tucked his hands into his khaki pockets.
"Didn't want to put that on you while you were dealing with so much in Bozeman. And awful as it is, that's part of life. Here and anywhere else."
7 in 10 years. Don't you think that's a lot?
"Of course I do. Each time we put more resources into counselors at the school, we've got 2 available for community members free of charge. But if these kids don't reach out, if we don't know they're hurting, how are we supposed to help?"
I sighed. "I'm not trying to criticize. It's been a long week." He untucked a hand and put his arm around my shoulders.
"Sorry."
"Do you think there's a chance they aren't suicides?"
"I wish I could say yes. I wish there was another explanation, but each of those deaths was investigated. Most came with notes.
Lily didn't leave one.
Or maybe you just haven't found it yet.
I'll keep looking.
I know you will. I don't like thinking of you dealing with this. It's heavy and hard. But someone has to carry it, and I trust you above anyone else to do the right thing.
Thanks. I leaned into his side. His faith in me was unwavering. I'd earned it. I'd keep earning it. Starting with giving Melina Green whatever answers I could find about her daughter.
Change of subject,
he said.
I stopped at Willie's on Saturday.
Okay. Shit. Willie hadn't struck me as a big mouth. He wouldn't have talked about Griffin and me, right?
He saw your picture in the paper,
Pop said. You mean the gossip rag? In the one and only newspaper I'd read, there hadn't actually been much news. Not that I'd read the whole thing. I'd had to stop after the front page. The article on my position as chief had basically called me a child cop and stated the only reason I'd gotten the job was because of Pops. But the paper had come out on Wednesday. I'd been at Indigo Ridge, then with Melina Green. Pops had called and left me a voicemail, fuming and cursing the Nelson name. By the time I'd listened to his message, then stopped by the grocery store to buy the paper, it had been after dark. When I'd finally sat down to read the article, I just hadn't had many fucks to give.
Willie mentioned that you and Griffin Eden were there together last week.
Damn it, Willie. Yeah, I muttered.
Want to tell me what's going on there?
Nope.
I thought lunch was a little awkward.
Awkward is an understatement. He laughed.
Then I'll assume I don't want to know.
You really don't.
Well, just be careful. Griffin is a good man, but he's been known to break a few hearts.
No need to worry about mine. I have no interest in Griffin Eden. That wasn't entirely true. One night with Griffin, and he'd become a constant on my mind. Maybe if I stopped kissing him, it would help. But he was too good-looking for his own good, certainly for mine. And my God, could he kiss. The chemistry was off the charts. The man was magnetic. Never in my life had my body responded so strongly to a man's touch, not even Skylar's. Replaying our night together had become an escape. When everything else in my head became too loud, I'd think of his kiss, of his hands and his tongue roaming across my skin. It was alarming to think so much about one man, but since I had no plans of seeing him anytime soon, what was the harm of a few errant thoughts when I was alone in bed? Pops and I finished our walk, mostly in silence. The streets of Quincy held a peace unrivaled. I hugged my grandpa goodnight to drive home, hoping to unpack at least one box before bed. Except the minute my gray house and red door came into view, I spotted a familiar truck. Two trucks, actually. One was coated in dust. The other was gleaming black and freshly waxed. Damn it. I really didn't have time for this. He was going to ruin my night, wasn't he? I parked in the driveway, climbed out, and slammed the door. Two handsome faces waited for me on the front porch. One stood, arms crossed, legs in faded jeans planted wide. The other was in a suit. He hadn't even loosened his tie. They exchanged a wary glance, then focused on me as I stopped on the bottom stair and crossed my arms over my chest. What are you doing here?
Chapter 6. Griffin. Was she talking to me? Those deep blue eyes narrowed, though not in my direction. The suit stood taller.
Hey.
Answer my question, Skylar.
Wynn marched up the porch steps, arms still crossed.
What are you doing here?
I tried calling you.
Me not answering should have been the first clue I didn't want to talk to you.
Or was it because she'd lost her phone? I kept my mouth shut, watching as this guy withered under her stare. Wynn had the death glare perfected. It was sexy as hell to see such a fierce woman, especially knowing she could throw it all away and let her guard down to flirt and laugh like she had at Willie's. And beneath it all was another layer. The professional, sharp-witted woman who'd come to my home bearing her notepad and pen. Complex, confident, compassionate. Each of Winslow Covington's facets was attractive. I fought a grin as she stood unmoving, waiting for the suit to speak. I was worried about you, Winnie. She patted the Glock holstered to her belt beside her gleaming badge.
Unnecessary.
He glanced in my direction, his mouth flattening. Skyler had been glaring at me since the moment I'd parked on the street and walked to Wynn's porch. Before I could knock on the door or ask who he was, he'd informed me that she wasn't here. He'd probably thought I'd leave. Why hadn't I left? Maybe because I'd instantly disliked this guy and the arrogance wafting off his tailored jacket.
Who is this guy?
He asked, jerking his thumb at me. She ignored his question.
How did you find my address?
He looked to me again, inching closer to her.
Can we talk in private? It's about the house.
What about the house? I told you 10 times I don't want it. If you do, then you can buy me out. Otherwise, quit stalling and put it on the market.
Winnie.
Skyler.
She uncrossed her arms and flicked a wrist like he was a fly that she was brushing away. Then she turned to me, and for a moment, I expected that same glare and dismissal. But then her expression lightened, so suddenly it made me blink twice. Gone was the glare. Gone was the set jaw and furrowed brow. A stunning smile transformed her face, showcasing her beauty. And damn it, I wanted to kiss her again.
Hey, babe.
Babe. Before I could make sense of that, she closed the gap between us, stood on her toes, and pressed her lips to the corner of my mouth. When she dropped to her heels, she shifted, giving Skyler her back. Her eyes widened, and she mouthed,
"Please,
pretend to be the boyfriend." Fine by me, as long as she knew I wouldn't ever be the boyfriend. "Hi, baby.
How was your day?"
I bent down, unable to help myself, and brushed my lips against hers. Better now. And damn it, that wasn't a lie. Every time I saw her, she was more beautiful.
Are you staying tonight?
She asked. Was planning on it.
Good.
She stepped past me and inserted her key into the lock. Without a glance at Skyler, she disappeared inside the house.
Winnie, he called.
She was already gone. I chuckled and followed her into the house, closing the door behind me. After navigating a maze of boxes, I found Wynn in the kitchen, standing against the counter, silently fuming. Friend of yours?
My ex.
Ah, now the fake boyfriend play makes sense.
Thanks for going along with it.
Welcome. I leaned against the wall.
Wait.
She gave me a wary glance.
Why did you go along with it?
I shrugged. He irritated me.
He irritates me too,
she muttered. Want me to hang out until he disappears?
If you wouldn't mind.
There's something I should know. Because if that bastard was harassing her, I'd march outside and make sure he understood the rules had just changed.
No,
she shook her head.
He's harmless unless you count him being a royal pain in my ass.
What's the story there?
She shrugged. We were together for 8 years, engaged for 6. We called it off 4 months ago and he moved out of our house, which he refuses to sell.
8 years was a long damn relationship. 6 years was one hell of an engagement. Why hadn't they gotten married? Is that why you moved here, your breakup?
Part of the reason. It was time for a change. When Pops mentioned that the former chief was retiring, I decided to at least apply. I honestly didn't think I'd be considered.
Even with Covey as the mayor?
Pops loves me, but he loves this town, too. He wouldn't put someone in the chief's position who wasn't capable of doing the job. And I am capable, Griffin.
The more I learned about her, the more I suspected she was. I heard you went to visit Melina Green yesterday.
How'd you know that?
Connor, you went to see her. Apparently he just missed you.
That was nice of him.
That was nice of you. She dropped her gaze to the floor.
The least I can do is show her that she's not alone.
That act, in and of itself, set her apart from the former chief. He'd always kept his distance from the community. Maybe it had been intentional. It had to be difficult to bust friends or family members. It was likely easier to remain apart than punish a buddy for breaking the law. Or maybe he was just a cold bastard. That was Dad's impression. Winslow was anything but cold.
I studied her as she stood there, the silence of the house growing louder. There was a weight on her shoulders, an exhaustion in her eyes. Hell of a week, huh?
That's one way to put it.
She looked to a box set on the counter, then trudged over, opening the top with a sigh.
As you can see, unpacking hasn't been a priority.
She'd put her life on hold to ask questions about Lily Green and visit a grieving mother. This is a nice place. Good neighborhood, too. One of my buddies in high school lived in the Green house three down.
Is that how you knew where I lived?
No, I asked my mom. One of her best friends was your realtor.
So much for privacy,
she muttered. Small town, privacy is relative.
I guess that's true.
She pulled a glass from the box and put it directly into the dishwasher. Want some help?
No, but thanks.
She finished with the glasses, and because it wasn't in my nature to stand around when there was work to be done, I collected the empty box from her and folded up the packing paper, then broke down the box. Where do you want this?